I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anilio, and you're listening to episode number 152 of the Functional Nerds. And for the first time ever, John is now going to regale us with a live performance of Classical Gas. Go, John.
You know, I should thought I could have learned that. I think I knew that at one point, too. That is Patrick Hester. He is an author, a blogger, and a podcast dude. You can check out his website, atfmb.com. You can follow him on Twitter, at atfmb. My name is John Anilio, and as Patrick alluded to, I am a musician. And you can check out my music over at my website, johnanilio.com. You can follow me on Twitter, at John Anilio. And today, we are delighted to be joined by Madeline Ashby. She is a science fiction writer and strategic foresight consultant living in Toronto. Her short fiction has appeared in FLURB. Can I say FLURB, or is that an acronym for something?
No, it's Rudy Rucker's magazine.
Oh, okay, great. Nature, Escape Pod, and elsewhere, her novels VN and ID are available from Angry Robot Books. Her nonfiction has appeared at BoingBoingTour.com and IO9. You can find her online at MadelineAshby.com, and you can follow her on Twitter at MadelineAshby. Madeline, thank you once again for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And you're not anywhere near the flooding, are you?
Oh, no. That's in another province. I'm way to the east of that. To the east of it, but like fairly east of it. It is, however, raining outside right now. There's a lot of, I guess we're getting the edges of it. So far we're good.
Okay, good.
That's good. Yeah, I was thinking about, and I know that it's totally because Toronto is on the East Coast, and I was thinking a lot about Vancouver because I was thinking, and I'm probably going to have that as part of my pick of the week because so many science fiction shows are shot in Vancouver. So I've been thinking a lot about Canada.
Oh yeah, no, it's the, as we call it, Planet Stanley Park. There's one park that has been every planet that you've ever seen on Stargate ever, which is to say, like, a national forest planet. It's why, for some mysterious reason, all of the planets on that show were, you know, forested and rainy.
Well, to be honest with you, there is an old tale in Jaffa legend that talks about a single park that was every planet. I think actually ancient alien theorists have talked about the fact that there was just the one place in all the world that was the alien settlement. Yeah. So, I'm sure that's going to be on Ancient Aliens soon.
Citizenship exam.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's where Bigfoot lands in their spaceship to come to Earth. Yeah. apparently Bigfoot is behind all the cow mutilations and the crop circles and the anal probing. It's all Bigfoot.
It's all one guy.
Yeah.
He's the mastermind.
Yeah. It figures if there's going to be aliens coming to Earth, we would get the freaky one.
Right.
That's
right.
Into like weird shit. Yeah.
All right, so we're going to talk a couple things about Madeline, a little bit about her books and about other things that she goes into writing her books. But let's, Patrick, anything you want to start off with before we get into our picks this week? Anything you want to let people know about before we kind of get rolling here?
Same stuff I've talked about before. It's Hugo voting season. Mm. You have until like July something or other, 31st or 27th or 4th or 12th, possibly the 13th. Could be later. I don't know. I have no idea.
Mid-July.
But there is the Hugo voter packet is out there. I'm up for two Hugos, and if you vote for me, I'll friend you on Facebook, or I'll follow you on Twitter. If you don't
Bake
vote
you
for
cupcakes.
Me, yeah, if you don't vote for me, I got nothing.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So go and check out the Hugo voting there. For Patrick, but let's move right into our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
I'm going to go first, actually, because I already mentioned it. I'm going to pick a television show that I'm watching on Netflix right now, and that is Continuum, which is shot in Vancouver. And I think they actually say it's Vancouver, which is one of the few times that a show actually in shot in Vancouver is admitting that it's Vancouver. Cause a lot of times they want to tell you that it's New York or Los Angeles or some other, some other place in the world.
Yeah. That's becoming more common. Orphan Black is really explicit about the fact that it is Toronto, that it, it is shot in Toronto. It's shot actually very close to where I live. And it's shot in Toronto as Toronto, and Toronto usually is New York or somewhere else. So it's pretty.
Here was the most fun one for me ever was there's a show called it's The Mentalist, and it's all set in California, and it's the California Bureau of Investigation, and I was watching it one night, and they went to Fresno. And I'm sitting there looking at that going, there are no houses like that in Fresno. None at all.
Or trees
like that. You know, because I grew up in Fresno. It's like, that's not Fresno. You know what? I'm thinking to myself, what part of Canada is that?
Exactly. Continuum, the first season is up on Netflix right now. So if you have a Netflix account, you can watch the first season. And the first season is 10 episodes. And I sort of gave it a shot because I thought the premise was interesting, and the first couple episodes I thought were kind of okay. And like anything else, if you give it a little bit of time, unless it's really, you know, not working for you, I did buy into it, and I'm enjoying it. It's not the favorite show I've ever seen in my life, but I think it's well done, and I think the premise is pretty interesting, where it's this group of they're called terrorists in the future, sort of travel back in time, and the main character, who is played by Rachel Nichols, who was in the G.I. Joe movie, amongst other
Scarlet.
Things.
Mm-hmm.
She was Scarlet in the G.I. Joe movie. She's like sort of a detective or cop from the future that sort of travels back with them, and she sort of integrates herself into our current time. I think it's pretty well done. It's pretty interesting. It's sort of like almost like Law and Order, but they have this overall arc of being from the future. And so it's sort of like almost like comfort food. It's not anything super groundbreaking in terms of science fiction, but it's, you know, pretty, you know, it's sort of like a case that they have to solve every week, but the case is usually related to that overall arc of the terrorists from the future being here, sort of causing stuff. And so it's good. And if you're, you know, as we mentioned in the beginning, so many science fiction shows shot in Vancouver, what you also notice when you watch a lot of these shows is you see a lot of the same actors.
Yeah. I was going to say Master Brytek is in that.
Yes.
Lexa Doig is in that.
Yes. Yeah. There's a lot of Stargate alum in it because Tony Amendola, who played Brytek, is in it. One of the cops was one of the scientists from Stargate Universe. I can't think of her character name from Stargate Universe. It was the one Asian woman on that. There was a couple different characters, but anyway, it took me a couple episodes to even realize, and I'm like, oh yeah, that's her. There's a lot of like, oh yeah, he was on Universe for an episode. Oh yeah, he was on Stargate Atlanta. So you do see, and I sort of enjoy that because I watched so much Stargate that it's like, oh, my old friends, they're working so well. I'm so happy to see my old friends working. So anyway, so it's worth a watch. I mean, you know, watch the first couple episodes if you don't dig it. Like, it's only 10 episodes for the season, so you can actually kind of barrel through it fairly quickly. And I think they're showing season 2 right now on the Sci-Fi Channel. I think it airs first in Canada, and then it's been airing here.
It airs on Showcase here. It airs on Showcase here, and then and I saw part. I had watched parts of it, and then it moved over to, like, I think Space, or then it just like got sold to or licensed back to American consumers.
Yeah. Typically, like 9 times out of 10, the sci-fi quote unquote original series is actually from Canada. Or from some other country.
Yeah, they have a really they have corporate partnerships. Like, they'll go into a co-development deal because if you can get the money from sci-fi, but your production company and like all of your writers and actors and so on are in Canada, then it complies with CRTC regulations out here regarding Canadian content. So you know, there has to be a certain amount of the programming mix that's quote unquote Canadian. No matter where the money came from. If the money came from 100% international, then it's no longer considered Canadian, but like, you can get around that by having all your talent from here, which is why like it's the co-production strategy is pretty common, and it's why so much stuff gets made in Vancouver and Toronto, because it's cheaper for everybody. Mm-hmm. And it helps us comply with, or it helps Canadian producers comply with, like, a frankly outdated and kind of weird regulation around the promotion of Canadian media that, you know, apparently everyone believes needs an extra leg up so that it won't be swallowed up by American producers or American cultural values or whatever. You know, there are times when I believe that just leaving that system alone and forcing those people to sink or swim might be a better option.
Interesting. Yeah, because I know it's like that with Canadian, with like radio and stuff too, or at one point it was where they had to play a certain percentage of Canadian.
No, that still exists.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Like,
yeah.
The ratios change over time, but it, you know, and CRTC has never like really been great at keeping up with changing technology, right? Like, I mean, with the advent of the internet and the advent of like, you know, fan-made Kickstarter projects, you know, it's just, they're just not, they can't keep up with what people actually want to do with their media, and the way that international collaboration is just so much easier now than it ever was before.
Sure. Very good. All right, Patrick, what is your pick this week?
My pick is they have released a they're calling it a sizzle reel for Beware the Batman, which is the new animated Cartoon Network computer like CGI series, and it looks pretty cool. That show is actually going to premiere on the Cartoon Network on July 13th. Mm-hmm. This show is one of the reasons why Young Justice and Green Lantern were canceled.
Okay.
It's because they wanted to do other things. So Beware of the Batman, it does look pretty cool. So we'll just have to see. They don't give us any like voices. They don't give us any. It's just a sizzle reel of clips with some music on it. But it looks pretty cool. So I'm cautiously optimistic.
Very good. Very good. Madeline, what is your pick this week?
I am going to do a very predictable thing and predict and sort of pick my partner's latest novel, The Geisters. I live with David Nickel, who's a horror writer who publishes out of Chizine Publications, Chizine Publications. Mm-hmm. And his latest is called The Geisters. And it went up on Boing Boing for a bit and stuff. And he's doing blog touring just as much as I am right now. Like, we're both on the same sort of creative cycle, it seems. And his book is about a young woman who, the way that I always summarize it is that it's about a young woman who's in a loveless marriage, who secretly may be in love with someone else, and that someone else may also be in love with a ghost. And so I think like it's a story about a girl, like it's a story about that, but this is a girl who who's been sort of exploited all her life and has a poltergeist who follows her around. And she thought that she had a handle on that poltergeist, and she really, really doesn't. And you know, hijinks ensue. She marries the wrong dude and then hijinks ensue. I guess yeah, that's actually about the better way of describing it. Girl marries wrong dude. Poltergeist gets angry.
Ah, that old plot.
So the poltergeist gets angry, and then does the dude set up cameras everywhere to capture the? Oh wait, that's different.
It's even worse than that. It's even worse than that. This is a guy who you realize is sort of preying on her because of the poltergeist. He's got a kink for the poltergeist. Ah. And essentially, you know, got into a relationship with her solely so that he could get into a relationship with the poltergeist. It never had anything to do with her as a person.
Interesting. Cool. So give us the title of that once more time so people can go check
that
out.
The Geisters. It's Geisters from Chizine Publications.
Very good. Very, very cool. Well, let us get on to our main topic this week. And talking about inhuman characters and making them more relatable. And I know Madeline's books have a lot to do with that. And I know she's written a blog post recently about that. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that, about having a sort of inhuman character that you have to make relatable for humans who are reading it so much.
Well, it's a thing that I've had to think about a lot recently in the past. Like, people keep asking me I feel lately that you kind of don't know your own book until you do like this big blog tour about it. Cause it actually asks you to write, you know, imagine being asked to write like 500 words a day about your book. You know, when writing 500 words a day is an achievement for people who are trying to write a book. It's a really good steady diet, actually. It's like exercise, right? So I think that I've been kind of getting to know my book better the more I'm asked about it, which kind of sucks because I wish that I had done all of these things and answered all of these questions at the start. That would have been more helpful, I think. Mm-hmm. I wish that someone had like just sat me down and like given me a strong like interview about it, like a really probing, incisive interview about it. So I've been kind of turning over things and stuff in my mind as a result. But I think that, you know, I think the making the not human characters seem like humans, or at least seem relatable, I think is the challenge of science fiction. And I think that it ties into our history as human beings, where we've spent profound amounts of energy, time, money, infrastructure, and so on defining who gets to be a human being, right? Like, we spend so much time. Like, there were times, you know, and Nora Jensen did this fantastic speech at Continuum, this convention in Australia, and she was the guest of honor, and she did this amazing, amazing speech. Where she talked about how her dad had been uncomfortable with her going to Australia because only up until recently, like in the past 50 years, were black people in in Australia considered anything but fauna. Like, the Aboriginal people of Australia were considered fauna. They were not considered Homo sapiens sapiens. Mm-hmm. And everybody knew that they, you know, were human beings, but they didn't receive that classification. And, mm-hmm. And so I think that, and in Canada, if you spend enough time here, if you move here as I did, inevitably you'll be stuck at home during the day, either because of a sick day or because you're a writer like me. And, you will come across the quote unquote heritage minutes. Heritage minutes are like these little public service announcements that reinforce Canadian identity and history for people who have just moved here and people who may forget what they learned in history class. And one of them is about the fact that up until, again, fairly recently, like in the last, I want to say the last 100 or last 100 years or last 150 years, women were not considered, quote, persons, like for the purposes of legal documentation and like owning a business or filing for divorce or like adoption or things like that. Like, they weren't considered people. They just weren't people. And so I feel as though like actually trying to define what is a person has really consumed us. As soon as we realized that we were special or different in terms of who we are as a species, we immediately tried to police that, mm-hmm. and divide ourselves into subgroups and be like, no, like, you know, four legs, good, two legs, bad, into like four legs, good, cloven hooves, better, or right, something right. like that. Mm-hmm. And so I think that it's definitely, you know, in science fiction, it becomes the focus of attention. But I think as a species, it's something that we've always worried about. And fairy tales are about that too, right? I mean, like, sure. There's the woodsman out in the snow who meets a woman in the snow, and he falls in love with her immediately, and she stays with him, and she says that she can't you know, he can never see her naked, or he can never see her washing her hair or something like that. And the moment that he does, she transforms into something else. And those are all about, you know, like, it looks like us, it talks like us, it walks like us, it's not like us. So I guess the challenge with making a non-human character seem relatable is to understand that those are the dynamics that undergird that from the very beginning. And mm-hmm. and I guess I try to make them, I try to make the VN, the self-replicating humanoids that I write about, I try to make them as prone to mistakes and foibles as human beings are. Even though they make as many mistakes as human beings do. They just make different ones, I guess, is the way to think about it.
Now, you know, what you sort of touched on reminded me of, and I don't know if you're familiar with this, it's a book and it's also a documentary as well. It's called Guns, Germs, and Steel by Jared Diamond.
Oh, yeah.
It was a big book. It might have been almost 10 years ago now.
I remember it, yeah.
So there's a documentary version on that because he wrote the book and then they did like a 2 or 3 part documentary on PBS or something, where he's in the documentary sort of talking about the ideas of it. And the basic right. conceit of the book is, and I read it a while ago, so I'm not going to get it all right now, but you know, you were talking about the Aborigines and you were talking about, you know, that going on in Australia. And this is sort of his point, is why did certain civilizations advance to a certain degree when others did not? What are the commonalities between them? Because as you said, you know, we as a species, we tend to be like, oh no, we're this, you're not what we are, because yeah. we did this. And you know, he sort of tries, Jared Diamond is the author, and he's an anthropologist, I suppose. It talks about how he's a guy that's gone out and lived. And I think a lot of the documentary takes place in Papua New Guinea, because I believe there are still, it's sort of untouched, where people yeah. still live this very, you know, old sort of lifestyle, where they're still sort of in a hunter-gatherer kind of
right,
mode.
Right.
And his experiences are, these people are just as intelligent, like, because it used to be thought like, oh, well, we have a capacity for intelligence that, you know, people like this don't have. And right. he's just like, right. that's absolutely false. it's just, so he sort of gets into why, and I think a lot of it has to do with just food sources and different things. And it does get into sort of this guns, germs, and steel idea of why certain sort of European cultures and stuff, you know, advance at one, you know,
yeah. It's having metal sooner and having, and developing antibacterial practice.
Yeah, it's sort of like luck of where, you know, your people, you know, just happen to be, you know, yeah. It's almost like the environment sort of played a big part in it. And then it just sort of accelerated certain things than others. But it's, if you're into this idea, it's very interesting reading. And I think that doc is up on Netflix too. So it's something very worth watching. But I was just thinking, like, yeah, these are ideas that I was just talking about. So, but you're talking about how science fiction sort of, we as human beings think about this stuff all the time, whether we want to or not. And science fiction sort of explores it from kind of a, from that angle, but sort of putting it in different clothing, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, I think that, I mean, that's the ultimate like thought experiment, right? That if you ran into, you know, we presume that we have all of these differences. I have a friend who calls it the tyranny of nuance, or the tyranny of, the tyranny of minor differences, where mm-hmm. we assume that minor differences are what's truly important. Whereas, like, if you had the Martian invaders show up, they would not care. Like, mm-hmm. they would say, like, it would be like us. I just got a kitten recently, like an hour ago, you know, when I look at the kittens, I see kittens of all colors, shapes, sizes, mews, sounds, paws, tails, whatever. And I know that they are all, you know, Felis catus. Mm-hmm. That is who they are, or that is their species. And I think that outsiders would probably look at us in the same way, that, you know, they don't, you know, they may look different, but inherently they are all the same. And, you know, and there are other organisms on this planet that treat us that way. I mean, like, you know, dogs don't discriminate. Viruses do not discriminate. things like that. So I think that using science fiction to talk about how silly those differences are is one of the best parts of it, because you get to invent this other species or other machine or other culture or what have you that can kind of call attention to that, to the just outright absurdity of some of those assumptions that we carry around every day.
Now, with your own books, is some of this from personal experience? Like, was this a real conscious decision to create this species within your own books to explore these ideas? Is there, or is it just something that you were always interested in, or is there any sort of personal stuff that you really wanted to explore in your books?
There was definitely personal stuff. It's weird because, like, again, in the same way that you don't know your book until you blog tour it, you kind of don't know your book until you don't know what your book was trying to tell you until you have, like, almost finished it. And then you realize, usually when you're asked to summarize it in a sentence, as we just, you know, did, then you realize what it was really about and stuff. Sort of in the same way where if someone asks you to summarize a dream that you just had in a single sentence, you understand immediately what the dream was kind of trying to tell you. Not from some outside entity, but because your subconscious is trying to get you to process it. And so I think, like, when I read my books over again, I suddenly realize all of the things that I was trying to tell myself. Mm-hmm. In terms of whether or not I went out with, like, a specific agenda about what the humanoids were going to say about humans, I kind of wanted to write a story. I was really tired of, like, a lot of stories where humans were really special. Mm-hmm. Like, I was really tired of that whole, like, you know, Edward Cullen dynamic of, like, you all smell so good and you all, like, you know, you're so special. Humans are, like, beloved by God among all things, blah, 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 blah. And it's just, like, I really, really did not like that. Mm-hmm. And I was really tired of it. And so I wanted to give voice to, like, people who would have seen the worst of us. And imagine what they would have to say, even when it was, you know, supposed to be complimentary. Like, I thought that, you know, when you create a robot species that has an inbuilt failsafe that makes them love humans, obviously they're going to see humans in the best light, but over time they're going to see them for what they really are. And I kind of wanted to write the story of robots sort of discovering that, you know, it's not like, they have no desire to rebel necessarily, but that doesn't mean that they like us all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, in the same way that you can love someone and not like them very much.
Sure.
In that moment, like, which I think is a really human thing. It's probably one of the most human things.
Yeah, they're called families.
Like, I love you, but I do not like you right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
That I kind of wanted to explore that and imagine what it would be like to live with that feeling forever.
great. Now, so Madeline, you know, you have your books that are out now, VN and the follow-up ID out now
it
as we speak.
It will be out on June 25th, I believe.
Okay, so by the time this airs, it will be out.
Yeah,
so.
I think June 25th, and then in the UK, it's like July 6th or something, or July 4th, maybe. I don't know. It's the two dates always get kind of, you know, weird in my mind. But it's available. It's certainly available for pre-order and so on. And it should arrive fairly quickly.
Excellent. Well, so VN is out right now and you can get that. And I know everywhere, you know, being very plugged into our community and following many different blogs, I always happen to see these reviews of VN. And now I've been seeing the reviews of ID pop up. And it seems like most people in our community are just loving these books. Most of them are writing great reviews of them. So congratulations on that. And
Thank
I wish you.
You
success with that. But so
I hope that continues.
So Madeline Ashby, the first book is VN. The new book is ID. Go and check them out. You can get them at your local bookstores and you can get them via, you know, ebook and all that kind of jazz as well. And your website is madelineashby.com, and you are on Twitter at madelineashby. Any cons coming up that you're going to be going to that people would?
We're definitely going to go to Worldcon. Yeah, we're definitely going to Worldcon. I was just at World Horror. I think that we might do CanCon in October, maybe, and then possibly also SFC Ontario. But we're definitely going to be at WorldCon. Like, that's where we're going to be next. There was talk of possibly going to ReaderCon, but it's very, very, like, I'm not sure that we're nailed down on that, so I don't want to commit to it. But WorldCon was really awesome about, like, you know, asking me to come way ahead of time and, like, sending out, like, all these, like, questionnaire things and stuff. Like, this year, these people are way, really on the ball.
Wow.
Stuff, not that other crews are not. It's just that, like, I was just really, really impressed and stuff. So, it, you know, when as a tip to convention organizers, if you really, really, really want people to nail down your convention really quickly, have everything prepped ahead of time.
That might be the experience of a published author. Because I'm gonna say, waiting for weeks after other people are talking about getting their pins and their access to the websites and that kind of stuff, and you're sitting there just waiting and waiting and waiting because you can't do anything yet, and you're wondering if you're even going to be able to nominate anybody because you haven't got your pins yet, and the deadline's looming, you know, that kind of stuff. So that just might be a little bit different experience when you're a published author and they're looking to get your attention.
And I recall, like, before I started going to, like, these big giant conventions, I would do a bunch of smaller ones in Toronto. And you could still tell, like, before, like, when I had nothing published and when I was just kind of starting out, you could still tell, like, when things had been managed really, really effectively.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can still feel that. And it's at the level, you know, I think that good organization is good for everybody, published or not, you know, young or old, men or women, staying on the ball really just good customer service benefits all your customers, right? No matter who they are.
Exactly, exactly. Cool. So Patrick is going to be at WorldCon too. Patrick, what else do you have going on this week? Obviously, you're going to be doing that, but what else is coming up for you?
Usual stuff. I'd like people to go out and buy Cahill's Homecoming. It's available at Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com. Visit ATFMB, go to Kirkus, click like on my stuff there. So they keep asking me to write things for them because that's cool. I think Flash Gordon Zydeguy should be out by now there, my review of that. So Kirkus, ATFMB, SF Signal Podcast, all the usual stuff.
Cool. Fantastic. And website atfmb.com and follow me on Twitter at atfmb. You can just check out my music. It's over at johnanilio.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at johnanilio. Well, everybody, thank you for joining us this week, and we will see you next time. We'll be right back.
thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.